Orchids are stunning flowers, often so perfect looking that it's hard to believe they're real. And we have a world expert on orchids right here in Wisconsin. Chuck Aker is with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee, also propagates and sells orchids through his own wholesale business, Flasks by Chuck Aker. He not only knows a whole lot and is willing to share it, but some of his stories sound like something out of Indiana Jones.
Yeah, that gets like that in this industry, Larry, for sure.
Oh, man. Orchid theft and whatnot, eh?
Yeah, orchid thievery and debauchery and all kinds of crazy things. And, yeah, there was actually a movie made about it some years ago called Adaptation. And The Orchid Thief was a book written on that, too. And so, yeah, it gets pretty crazy out there with these orchid people. I'm probably right in there with them.
Well, I tell you what, it's really great to have you with us. And I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. If you have a question for Chuck, I hope you'll join us. Maybe you've got, maybe you grow orchids, or maybe you've had great success. Maybe not. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And I think Judith's probably going to post. I have in front of me, how many here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Count them, 5 orchids. Judith has taken a shot of those and is probably going to be turning up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show in the next few minutes. And they're all beautiful. They all, I mean, they look very, very different from each other. What defines an orchid?
Well, the main thing that defines an orchid is when you look at the flower, you can only divide this flower in half on one particular plane. Okay. That means, you know, if you look at like a rose or a dandelion, you can cut that flower in half on any different plane and still right. have equal halves to it. An orchid is different in that respects, and the term for that is zygomorphic. So that is really one of the things that defines orchids. Another is the particular parts of the flower. Typically an orchid has 6 segments to it. There'll be a dorsal sepal, 2 lateral sepals, a petal, and then a lip, which is just another modified petal. So that is another one of the taxonomical factors of the orchid family. And most orchids, a good 99.9% of them too, are they're hermaphroditic, so they can actually reproduce just with themselves. They don't need another flower to do that with. So we can self-pollinate most all these orchids and create more just from that as well. Those are really the main factors that describe orchid.
And we have, what, 20,000 or more?
Yeah, you know, actually there's like some, depending on what school of taxonomical research you follow, they're pushing 30,000 now because they started splitting some of the grouped species. Now, there's been a lot of DNA testing being done in the recent past, so they're seeing that these are indeed different species now. So the number of naturally occurring orchids in the wild has gone up right around 30,000. And on top of that, we have some 200,000 man-made registered hybrids that commercial growers and hobbyists alike have been producing by crossbreeding and you know, just creating new hybrids and new genera of orchids. And then they're constantly finding new species in the wild, too. So it's just never-ending. Yeah, it's the world's largest flowering plant family with orchids on every continent in the world except the Antarctica. And I think we have 42 or 46 naturally occurring species here in Wisconsin. So it's just a huge plant family.
Gretchen in Waukesha has a question for you. Hi, Gretchen.
Good morning. Thanks, Larry and mm-hmm. Chuck. I enjoy the show quite a bit. I had a question for Chuck about Phalaenopsis mm-hmm. Orchids. How likely is it that the Phalaenopsis would set out 2 spikes and 2 sets of blooms at the same time?
We're looking at one right now, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, we do have one right in front of us here. You know, it's getting to be more common due to the fact that the modern-day Phalaenopsis hybrids have just become so much more vigorous growing and faster growing. And what actually helps produce the two spike is the Phalaenopsis has to actually create one new leaf essentially for each flower spike. So in between your last flowering season and your next flowering season, if your plant was really happy and grew really well and cranked out two nice new mature leaves, one right after the other, and then conditions are set for the blooming cycle to come, which is just cooler nights, then that plant will subsequently generate two flowering spikes. And, you know, the flower count on those spikes, of course, is going to be undetermined. But that's essentially how you get two spikes on these Phalaenopsis these days.
Great. Well, thanks a lot.
All right. Well, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks. Dan and Hayward, hello to you.
I've been waiting so long for you guys to have this show again. About the last time they were talking about orchids, I inherited two that were headed for the dumpster, and the one is a white, and they're both of them, I believe, just the common grocery stores. You know, they sell them just about anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the Phalaenopsis orchid, probably, yep.
One is white, and then she told me the other is supposed to turn purple, and they had cut the stems off of the purple one. And I did exactly the same thing for both plants. I repotted, drilled holes in the pot, put moss. I did everything that you guys talked about the last time. And the white one, I should enter it in the fair. It's unbelievable. And the purple one, it's finally now starting to poke up a little stem, but it acts like it's unhappy. The leaves are kind of droopy and soft, and it just doesn't seem thrilled with the program that I've got, you know, on. What's the difference between the two?
Yeah, well, the plant that's unhappy, when you state that it has, you know, the floppy, more flaccid leaves to it, that's usually a telltale sign that something has gone wrong at that root system. If you really want to be diligent and dedicate yourself to saving that plant, I would recommend, this is going to sound a little harsh, but I would recommend cutting that flower spike off that it's trying to produce right now, and then pull it out of the pot and take a look at that root system, because I think your root system has been compromised somehow by something, you know, whether it was, you know, just overwatering once or twice or whatever, or maybe it didn't like the medium it was planted in or something. But I do believe you've got some root issues there, and that plant is just going to go soft on you. And then with the flower spike going on at the same time, that really sucks the life out of them. So I think that's your only road there for helping that one recover and get it freshly repotted and, you know, nurture it along a little bit. See if you can get those leaves to stiffen up a bit.
Mm-hmm. Would I trim the bad parts of the roots and repot and fertilize it with the orchid fertilizer? Or?
Well, trimming up the bad roots is good, and if that leaves you with no good roots, then I think, you know, you probably just want to toss that plant and, you know, start over again. But, yeah, repot it in some fresh mix and then kind of stay away from the fertilizer for a while until you see the plant perking up, because the fertilizer isn't going to be used at all until the plant starts to make some new roots.
Mm-hmm. It's been trying. It's a little hard out for a year, and I don't have the heart to kill it.
Yeah, you know, you can save it. Just go through that protocol, you know, trim her up, repot it, stay away from the fertilizer for a few months, and do a little misting on the leaves, and it'll perk up. 9 times out of 10, they do.
Thanks, Dan, for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Chuck Aker, orchid specialist with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. Also has his own business, Flasks by Chuck Aker. Great to have him along, and certainly thank you for listening. And call us at 1-800-642-1234 with your questions. We'd love to hear from you. You mentioned root problems. Are there pests or diseases that orchids are especially vulnerable to?
Yeah, you know, the pests are pretty much the same as we get in our houseplant fair. You know, you get the mealybug, you get the spider mite or the aphid, you know, and that's all pretty easily controlled on the orchid. And one thing about the orchid, the leaves are so tough that, you know, you can get a doggone terrible infestation on these plants, and the plants really don't succumb to it. But it is often, you know, recommended to treat those, of course. Sometimes you get a bad infestation, it gets up on the flower buds and into the flower, it can, sometimes shorten the bloom life of those flowers. But other than that, those plants are tough with that. So it's not real common to catch bugs. It does happen if you introduce something from another plant, but normally you don't get it on its own.
How'd you get interested, by the way, in orchids?
Well, I've had the good fortune of being born and raised in orchids.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, my family started the orchid business here in Madison back in the 50s, and it actually was a spinoff of a doctor's hobby that started way back in the 30s. So the orchids in Madison here have a very, very, very long history, and my parents owned the business for a number of years, and my sister owned the business for a number of years, and now another gentleman has purchased the business in 2007, and I stayed on to help him grow the orchids, and it's part of my life, you know. It's a way of life for me.
Ah, wonderful story. Alan in Cashton has a question for you. Hi, Alan.
Hello. By the way, vanilla orchids, do you know much about them, and do you have any good information you can get, like a book or something on them, and where I can get a hold of them?
Yeah, great question. Vanilla, we raise about three or four different species of vanilla at the greenhouse, and we always have them for sale. A lot of people don't realize that vanilla, our flavoring, actually comes from an orchid.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a really fun plant to grow because it's a vine. It grows on a vine, and it's a very fast-growing vine. In orchid terms, it grows very rapidly. You can see about 2 to 4 feet of vine growth on these plants sometimes in a year. So it's very interesting. We have
vanilla beans.
Yeah, you get the plant to full maturity, which usually takes about 10 or 15 feet of vine, and you can grow that on a trellis or an obelisk or whatever just to get it going up and down or around and around. And once it gets mature, it blooms. And when it blooms, you have to pollinate the flower. And the pollination process is very simple. The mechanics of it is very simple. And once you've pollinated that flower, then that actually creates the bean. But I might add, if you get that the flower, you have to pollinate that flower bright and early in the morning because that bloom only lasts less than 12 hours. So by afternoon, that flower is expired and your chance of pollinating it and actually creating a bean is gone out the window. So get up early. And that's one of the reasons why vanilla is kind of expensive. It is a, you know, very laborious crop to grow in the vineyards, and you know, they have to pollinate these blooms right away in the morning. But our big vanilla at the greenhouse flowered profusely last May, and I had dozens and dozens of beans hanging on. Passed them all off to a friend of mine, and she's curing them right now. So
there you go.
Yeah, fun plant to grow.
Now, would those be available at this weekend now at the Orchid Quest?
Oh, absolutely. We are bringing two different species to market at our show there. We have a solid green-leafed species, which is the most commonly grown, Vanilla planifolia. And then we have a super variegated version of that same species, and that is just the green and white leaf, and they're really pretty plants just to have, even if you don't flower them. They're just fun to grow.
Tell us about this weekend's Orchid Quest event. What's all going on? I've been there many times, and I tell you, it is a wonderful way to spend a few hours in February.
Oh, it really is, Larry. And this is the 27th annual show that the local Orchid Society here in Madison called the Orchid Growers Guild is putting on. Our society here is just really full of great people. And this show is just amazing. We take up about 30,000 square feet of the Alliance Center, and we just
in
fill
Madison.
It. In Madison here, yes. And we just fill it with orchids. There's an exhibition room where commercial growers like ourselves and others that come from all over the Midwest will set up their exhibits, and those exhibits are judged by the American Orchid Society as well as the Orchid Grower Guild, so there's two judging levels there. Then there's a room dedicated specifically for orchid plant sales and orchid art and other orchid-related products. Then we have some really great seminars that we can go through maybe a little later that happen on Saturday and Sunday. So some really great speakers. We've got a gentleman coming in actually from California this year. Our keynote speaker is Fred Clark from Sunset Valley Orchids in San Diego, and he really puts on a great program. So there is just a ton of stuff going out there. Just, you know, coming out there and seeing those exhibits is just absolutely daunting because of the size and scope of this orchid plant family. I mean, every year I see something that I've never seen before, and it just totally blows you away. It's just beautiful.
I defy anybody to go there and not walk away with an orchid.
I don't think
I've ever gone and not purchased at least one.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. And there's orchids out there in bloom for, you know, $10 or less in some cases. You know, we have these miniature phalaenopsis that are beautiful, and there's just so much to be had out there. Just so much.
A lot of fun on Saturday and Sunday. So
yep.
At the Orchid Quest. Oh, man. At the Alliant Energy Center in Madison, just on the edge of Madison. Stephanie and Blair, we'll get to you in just a minute. A reminder, Chuck Aker, our guest today from Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Chuck Aker, as we talk about Orchid Quest going on Saturday and Sunday. Boy, this weekend is going to be a wonderful time for you to view, to see some great orchids and maybe even buy one. And certainly, Chuck's here to answer your questions about orchids as well. So I hope you'll email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And I think, we have up on my Facebook page right now, Judith in her usual efficient self has took some photos of the orchids we have in front of us and has posted them up on my Facebook page. So go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and you can see them there. They're really pretty. Stephanie in Beloit, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you, Larry. I would like to know if Chuck has a mail order business. I would like to send orchids to a friend of mine in Oregon who grows them. It's kind of a hospitality gift thing I want to do for her.
Oh.
And what would he recommend?
Well, yeah, we do have an online store, and that's you can get to that by on the web, orchidsgardencenter.com. And there you'll see online store tab, and then that takes you to our full inventory, which is really daunting. but as far as, were you thinking of sending a flowering plant to this person?
Yes.
Okay. Well, mail ordering something that's actually in flower is somewhat inconducive, especially right now. I mean, we can do something that is pre-flowering. That means if it... you know, if the bloom spike is being generated or the buds, you know, are just starting to come, something like that transports, you know, much better and much safer. Otherwise, you're just going to end up with, you know, just a mess. But yeah, we have that. And we probably wouldn't be shipping, though, until we're probably going to start shipping sometime in March again. So that isn't going to...
Yeah, that'd be okay. Give me the name of your company again, please.
That would be Orchids Garden Center and Nursery. Yep.
Garden Center and Nursery.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Yep. We have a big online store there, so check that out.
Yeah, I think we're up on my Facebook page too. There's a link. Yes, there is. There's a link to the center on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show.
Cool.
So. And what was the city you were located in?
Wanakee.
Wanakee.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you much, Chuck.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. The only Wanakee in the world.
Yeah.
I think. Still
Yeah, I think so.
Mary Ann in Oshkosh. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry, and hi, Chuck, too. I have a problem that, I don't know, I guess it's kind of a desirable problem. I have two orchids that won't stop blooming. So they...
That's terrible.
Well, I know, it's really awful, but we've gotten to the point that the stalks are really long and ungainly, you know, disproportionate to the plant.
Right.
So I kind of know I should cut them off, although it's going to kill me to cut off those flowers, but I guess I can stick them in a vase or something, but how low should I cut them down?
Okay, you're speaking of the phalaenopsis orchid, I'm assuming, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, they'll sometimes just bloom continuously, and then you get this long spike, you know, 3-4 feet or something, with the flowers at the very tail end of that. So yeah, it is it is time to cut that off, and go ahead and just cut it off right down at the base, right where it comes out of the plant. Leave yourself a 1/2 inch or 3/4 inch little stub there. And yeah, that's the best way to do it. Clean up the old baggage, you know, and then maybe get it repotted this spring. Then you can get it all started all over and charge it all back up for a whole nother years of blooming cycle again. So yeah, that's what you want to do.
Is it a bad time to be giving it food or anything like that in terms of, I don't know, the weather and dormancy or whatever? Or should I just go ahead and give it some? I've never had them. They just grow.
Yeah, but. The Phalaenopsis is perpetually growing all the time. So, I mean, we typically fertilize all year long. However, we do fertilize a little less often in the winter due to the fact of the short days. So, you know, maybe once a month in the winter and, you know, twice a month in the spring and summer and early fall like that is good. But, yeah, that's pretty simple.
Do you have advice on your page for what's good to use for food? I have never bought any, so.
Oh, yeah. We recommend a balanced all-purpose plant food like 20-20-20, and our care instruction sheet posted on our website is quite informative for growing the orchids of different varieties here in the upper Midwest. So, yeah, pull that up and check that out.
Thanks.
Hey, you're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Ross and Gaze Mills, your turn. Hi, Ross.
Yeah, hi, you guys. So I've bought a Phalaenopsis, and I think I overwatered it because the leaves kind of got kind of a shrivelly. I guess sort of like two questions. One is like you hear people say that the orchids get their water from the air, and I'm wondering if like the water that you provide to the plant itself is sort of almost like extra. It seems difficult to, you know, the medium is sort of bark, and so you stick your finger in there, and you don't know if it's the right moisture content. I'm always overwatering, and it seems like those that are neglected seem to do best.
Yeah.
I was just wondering what you thought.
Yeah, you know, that thrive on neglect is my motto at the greenhouse when I sell plants. So, you know, people are, us as humans, we like to nurture, and a lot of times we nurture our orchids to the point of demise, and the overwatering is really the biggest culprit there. And, you know, your bark, it does take a little bit of getting used to get used to when that's going to need water. One of the tips I use is to get used to the weight of the pot. So after you've watered it, you know, you simply pick it up and feel how hefty it is. And, you know, a week later, pick it up. And if it still feels like it's got a little heft to it, you know, let it go. The orchid is far better left to be underwatered than it is to be even slightly overwatered. They really do thrive on that negligent watering cycle. One of the other tips I use for diagnosing the moisture in the bark pot is a sharpened pencil. And a freshly sharpened pencil, you drive that right into the core of the pot and let it sit for 30 seconds or so and then pull it out. And it's similar to if you put a toothpick in your mouth and you'll see the discoloration of the wood from the dampness there, right on that sharpened point of the pencil. And again, if you see moisture there, let it go a couple more days because, again, you're better off to underwater. Mm-hmm. So that's the real key with the orchid is to get them usually to dry out thoroughly between their watering cycles and then give them a good thorough watering so it can drain out well.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling, Ross. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. We finally have some open lines again at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And speaking of emails, Adrian in Milwaukee emailed us and says, I have a beautiful orchid, my first one. It was blooming when I received it. The blooms died, and now I have new blooms, so it's doing well despite me. My question is that there appears to be roots growing out of the plant. What should I do?
Okay, she's got a good plant going there for sure. So yeah, getting the secondary, you know, shot of blooms on there means that plant is happy in its environment, and the air roots that are shooting up, that is just telltale good environment for that plant. So that plant is really happy. What should she do? Well, if the plant is still flowering, of course, let it continue to go through its flowering cycle, and it's probably going to develop some more air roots in between that interim as well.
So those roots are good.
Those roots are good to see, definitely. That means the plant is happy in its environment. And at the time of repotting, you know, when the plant finally decides to finish blooming, whenever that is, providing it's not in the winter, because we don't like to repot in the winter. So if it finishes flowering, you know, and before fall, you just cut those old bloom spikes off of it and do a little repotting and clean up and try to tuck some of those air roots into the pot, you know, get them covered up with the potting medium, and you know, they're going to come creeping back out again if it's that good of culture there. So that's a very good thing to see, and that's a very common cycle for the orchid to have, those air roots.
You talked earlier about orchids being created, you know, that there are breeders out there, and I think you've done some of this yourself.
Absolutely.
How are our new orchid hybrids created? What's the process?
Well, it's an interesting process for sure. You know, we create new hybrids at the greenhouse constantly, and, you know, that stimulates the economy here, too, and bringing in new and different stuff. The basic process is pollinating of the flowers. So you take the pollen from one particular flower that you have some desirable attributes to, and you put it on the stigmatic surface of the other flower on the other plant that you again have, you know, desirable characteristics to, and the seed pod is created, and that's your basic hybridizing right there. You're just cross-pollinating. So depending upon what we have cross-pollinated, we could either be remaking a popular cross that has been sold out that we want to, you know, reintroduce again, or we could be going and stepping completely outside of the box and trying something that no one else has ever done and subsequently creating something new. Although sometimes that isn't always fruitful. I mean, there's a lot of times we hybridize something like that and it turns out to be you know, garbage can material. That happens in all plant industries. But yeah, it's really interesting. And one thing about the orchid family, too, is that some of the orchid genera, the family of the particular plant, like Cattleya, can be bred with Epidendrum. So then you get Epicattleya, and then that can be created into something else. So the ongoing process of mixing the genera just becomes very, very complex, and you can create new genera of orchids. And that's what's been going on in the recent past, too. And, you know, you can name the genera after, you know, the creator. So if you created it, you can name it after yourself. That's what my endeavor is coming up here. So.
Well, Marta in Verona wonders something here. Marta, are you there?
I am. Thanks, Larry, for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Phalaenopsis that I've had for about 4 years, and it's bloomed every year successfully, except for this past year. It did send up a shoot. It had about 4 blossoms on it, and nothing ever happened. They never bloomed.
No. Did they look like they were trying to open and they got stuck together right at the apex, right at the tip?
No.
No? Okay.
No. They were, you could actually see the individual pods.
Yeah.
Would, you know, but then it's like they just stopped. And nothing, you know.
And they didn't turn brown and want to fall off or anything like that. They just sat there in suspended animation.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a puzzler. You know, I see that every once in a while. And I tell you, it hasn't been very often in my life of growing orchids. And I'd be honest with you, I have no idea what it is. But what we kind of think it is, a plant just didn't have enough energy to do its job. What you can do there is cut that flower spike off now, right away, and stimulate the plant to produce another bloom spike while we still have the conditions to do so, which is our, you know, cooler climate right now through the winter and spring. So then the plant might be able to, you know, charge up a little bit in between now and then and actually produce a, you know, a viable flowering stem for you. That's what I would do, is just cut that completely off now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I did. It was actually a while ago.
Okay.
It was probably about 4 or 5 months ago that it happened. And
okay.
I did cut it off. I actually repotted it. I took it out. I cut all the dead roots off. put some new, you know, some new bark, and it's sending up some nice, beautiful leaves, so I'm hoping it'll bloom again.
Oh, good. So you get that leaf to finish maturing and then get it in a cool, cool room that gets down to about 55, and then that'll stimulate the bloom spike.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot, Marta, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Betty in Watertown. Hi.
I'm a new listener, and I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
And then I have an orchid that I got, and it had 21 blossoms on it.
Wow.
This was in 2013.
Wow.
And I'm new at orchids, too. And I just picked up a real reasonable one at a store. And I thought, oh, I'd like to soil, so I got my third one. But anyway, my question is, the stem got brown, you know, after it blossomed.
Mm-hmm.
And now I was wondering, I cut the dead stem off. Will it come back with more stems with blossoms?
Yes, and you're referring to the Phalaenopsis orchid, I'm assuming?
Yes, it is.
Yes, so when the stem is completely brown, that means that it's fairly inactive, and then, yes, cut it off. That was the smart thing to do there, and water and fertilize and give it plenty of light, and as that plant develops another leaf, which it probably has or is in the process of doing right now, when that leaf is fully matured and done growing or another one starts, you know, that's when the plant is ready for another bloom spike. And sometimes you have to move the plant to a cooler room. If you don't get a bloom spike on it, you know, the next month or so, take it to a room that's a little cooler at night. They like that cool nighttime temperature. So many people think that the orchid needs to be in this hot, humid, steamy jungle environment, and that is just so untrue.
Well, we always turn our heat down at night, so it seems to enjoy. Well, we always had it in the living room window, you know, when they quit blossoming. Then I moved them to the bedroom. And, you know, it is cooler at night.
Good. That's going to help. You bet.
Yeah, I didn't realize I could grow orchids.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yes, indeed. Way to go. All right.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And, again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. And let's see. Margo in Glendale, it is your turn. Hi, Margo.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a Phineopolis that I transplanted, and I cut a lot of the roots off. And now I had a flower stalk on it, left the flower stalk on. Now the flower stalk is developing a little plant in the middle of the flower stalk. What do I do? The mother plant looks kind of, it's just got two leaves left.
Oh, okay. So the mother plant isn't so vigorous, and what it's doing there, it's making a kiki. It's commonly known as a kiki, and that's a term that the Hawaiians kind of trademarked as baby or I think it's kaiki or kiki, they call it. So, yeah, you've got a couple options there. You can either let that little kiki develop to the point where it actually will generate two or three little roots, and once it does that, you know, the roots are an inch or so long, you can cut that off and then plant that. It may be the fact that your mother plant is giving up the ghost and is heading south, and that's kind of why it's making the little kiki to try to perpetuate itself. But the other option, pardon me?
A couple of years. I've had it maybe about 10 years or so.
Oh, it's a fairly aged plant, I mean, your other option is to cut the kiki off now and try to cater to that mother plant and get it to bounce back. But I think you're probably better off letting the kiki start out and start out with a new plant, because I think that's what the plant is aiming to do there.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you.
You bet. Yeah,
thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have a great photo up on my Facebook page from Gigi on her orchids. Oh, man, they're in bloom. They're beautiful. She said, I noticed that orchids in Hawaii grew in the grass. So she said, I copied that environment for my home. And she says, "There, that's an asparagus fern.
Yeah.
Among the orchids."
Yeah, that's pretty ingenious. You know, the orchid loves the company. It really does like the companionship. So the more plants you have around it, it creates the microenvironment. So that's very good. That asparagus fern is offering transpiration there, and it just makes, a microclimate for that plant. Boy, is that one healthy-looking plant.
Yeah, it surely is.
Nice.
Go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can see that plant, too. Let's go to Fred in Alaska, all the way from Alaska. Hi, Fred.
Hi, Larry. Well, I'm from Alaska, but I'm actually on the shore of Lake Superior right now photographing the great ice conditions.
Wonderful.
Wow.
You're doing the ice caves.
Yeah. Doing the ice caves, it was great. Lots of people out there, but cool. Real beautiful ice formations. My orchid question is, I've been for the last couple of years dumpster diving for orchids and have two different sources that when it's above freezing, I've found quite a few orchids in. And we've been real successful in getting them to come back into blooming. But I was curious about Alaska, we're even drier and usually colder, not this year, than you are here in the upper Midwest. And how do you deal with the really low humidities that you have inside during the winter months?
Well, there's a couple of things you can set up. You can get yourself what we call the humidity tray, and basically it's just a shallow tray, and you can put some inverted pots or inverted saucers in there that are going to raise the plant up and then put water in there. But make sure that the bottom of the pot that the orchid is growing in isn't actually, you know, sitting in the water, that it's going to be wicking the water up, and make sure that, you know, whatever you're putting in there, the pot or the saucer, isn't actually, you know, wicking as well, because then you're just going to have this perpetual watering cycle going on, and that's going to rot out the bottom. So the humidity trays are highly, highly beneficial in the dry climate. We recommend them highly here in Wisconsin, too. We have some that are commercially made out of polycarbonate plastic with a grid on top. They're super strong and easy to clean, and you can carry them around with your plants on them and water them like that and stuff. The other thing is on top of doing that, you can do a little misting and do some misting in the morning right away. And that evaporation then for those, you know, next hours or so really benefits those orchids, and it pulls in the through the leaf stoma. They'll pull in that moisture, and they'll stay adequately hydrated with both methods. So those will work great for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've been doing as far as the misting, usually two or three times a day.
You bet.
And then holding off and giving them dunking waters, watering maybe once every 1 to 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like things are doing well, mm-hmm. But I read on the internet and stuff, concerns about low humidity, and just was curious about that.
Yeah.
And perhaps we will try the trays with the water underneath.
Yeah, you know, the humidity
the
humidity is really low on the totem pole of importance. So don't beat yourself up trying to create optimum humidity. You know, water and light and other cultural aspects are much more important. So mm-hmm. It sounds like you're doing really well.
Yep. Thanks for calling.
It's been fun. And thanks for talking.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We are talking orchids today with Chuck Aker, who is with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. This is a Orchid Quest weekend. This weekend, Saturday and Sunday, is your chance to go to the Alliant Energy Center just on the edge of Madison. It's a nice, easy place to get to with lots of parking and a chance for you to see and purchase some wonderful orchids with tons of experts there to answer your questions, including Chuck Aker. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just to let you know, coming up next week on Garden Talk, Lisa Johnson joins me. Lisa is, of course, a Dane County horticulture agent, and she's been a guest on the show many, many, many times. And we're going to be talking with her, of course, answering your questions, but also we'll probably be promoting the Garden Expo, which is Wisconsin Public Television sponsored, and Wisconsin Public Radio plays a big role in it, too. And Lisa Johnson and I will be in person answering questions and doing a little dog and pony show. Is that the way to say it? Maybe that's the way to say it. We'll be talking with people from 9 to 10, I think, in the morning at the Garden Expo. So that's the coming up weekend. But I tell you, this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, we've got Orchid Quest. And Chuck Aker with us to talk about it. Always great to have him along, and thank you for listening in. Call us at 800-642-1234 with your questions. Pauline in Lake Forest, Illinois has a question for you, Chuck, so let's go to her. Hi, Pauline.
Good morning. I'm really enjoying your show, and I learn a lot when I listen to it.
Thank you.
But I have a question about watering orchids. I know Chuck addressed this, but I was advised to just put an ice cube or two in the pot once a week. And I have an orchid that's been doing well and blooming for 3 years. I've had it bloom 3 times. But I've gone to using the ice cube instead of watering the pot, and I'm wondering what Chuck's opinion is on that.
You've heard that one before, haven't you, Chuck?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, it does work. We don't advocate it for a couple of reasons. One is that this is a great terminology that a very close personal friend of mine uses, that there's no ice in the jungle. So, but you know, it does work. And what has happened in the orchid industry lately is there's a company that has promoted and advocated that particular watering method for the product that they sell. So it actually works, you know, really well with their product. And now we're seeing that, you know, people want to use it on all the different types of orchids in, you know, various different types of mixes mm-hmm. and pot sizes and stuff. So that particular watering program is good. It's conducive for that product. And we do have a lot of customers that are using it across the board with good success. Now, I don't want to see a change. If it's working, you don't mess with it. You can't fix what's not broken. So, you know, continue on with it. And the other thing is, with the watering is that generally in something that is growing in bark, we like to flush the pot with the water. And I know that sometimes it's a little bit more laborious to carry your orchid to the sink and run the water through it for 10 seconds than it is just to throw a couple ice cubes on it. But the flushing actually is beneficial because it flushes out some of the stale minerals. It brings in new minerals and ions, and it just brightens up that whole area there in the pot. And that's very important for the health of the orchid root. But again, if it's working for you, continue with it. You know, you can bend all the rules with these orchids and be incredibly successful.
There you go.
Well, I thank you for that advice. I used to water the old way, and mm-hmm. I changed. And but I think your advice about flushing the stale minerals out is very good, and I appreciate that.
So okay.
Thank you.
Maybe go back to that. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. We had Risha called earlier. Couldn't wait or couldn't hang on, but she wonders if there are any orchids that will grow well without good sun. What are the light requirements in general for orchids?
Well, in general, the orchid likes it fairly bright and somewhat indirect. That's general. There's orchids that'll take, you know, nice bright sunshine on the leaves, and then there's some orchids that we have called the jewel orchid, which is incredibly low light. You can practically grow the thing in the closet. Really great houseplants. And the funny thing about the jewel orchid, and we'll have some of those this weekend at Orchid Quest too, it really isn't one of those orchids that you grow for the beautiful flowering aspect of the orchid, because the flower is kind of a little white, obscure little thing. But the plant is drop-dead gorgeous. It has this velvety, dark, brownish leaf to it with these incredibly striking red veins through it, and it kind of grows almost like Tradescandia, or the commonly known wandering Jew plant. It'll come out of the pot and kind of cascade down and then lift back up, and they're really easy to grow, and they're super low light. And there are other jewel orchids in that group too that are very low light plants. Some of the slipper orchids, too, are very low-light orchid growing. It's, I can go on and on. Mazdevallias, things like that. So there's an orchid for every climate, I tell you.
Darren in Madison has a question. Hi, Darren.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question about orchids that are native to Wisconsin. Where would be some good places to view some native orchids in Wisconsin, and what times of year would be the best to see them flowering?
Well, that's a great question, and to be honest with you, that's a little bit out of my field of expertise, so I'm not even going to mess that one up for you. But the gentleman that you're going to want to get in contact with is going to be speaking Sunday at Orchid Quest, and his name is Scott Weber, and he is a native orchid specialist, and he is right here in Baraboo, Wisconsin. I've known Scott for close to 40 years, and his program that he puts on is absolutely incredible. And he also runs a small business, too, and you can locate him on the web, Bluestem Farms. If you just pull that up, you'll find some information there, and you can contact Scott directly. And he's a wonderful man, and he has got the knowledge of the natives. We don't do any natives in our regime at the greenhouse at all. All our stuff is tropical, so.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah, great. Actually, I've spoken with Scott numerous times before. He sure knows the native plants.
He does, and he often can take you out, you know, and he's taken our group, our Orchid Growers Guild, out on several expeditions around Wisconsin during a height of a bloom season of a particular native orchid. So I don't know if he's doing that this spring or not, but he's a guy to talk to.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You bet.
Thanks, Darren. Thanks for calling. And the Orchid Growers Guild, somebody like Darren, it might be a really good organization to belong to.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. This is a really great group of people, and they meet at Ulbrich Gardens right here in Madison every third Sunday of the month, and it's very educational to listen to the speakers that come to these meetings and just to you know, banter with the other members, and they bring plants for ribbon judging at every meeting so you can learn up on, you know, what someone else has done, or, you know, it's just so educational. They're just such a great group of people. And on top of that, if you join, you get a small discount on an orchid plant at our nursery. So there's another incentive.
There you go. Cindy in Mineral Point. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Yeah. Thank you for taking my call. Actually, I am orchid sitting for a relative, and a couple weeks ago, I cracked open the window that they were near about an eighth of an inch, and I didn't see any damage right away, but a week and a half after that, I noticed that I think I froze those plants, and I wondered if there's anything that I could do to save them.
Uh-oh.
How long did you have the window cracked?
Only about an hour and a half.
Oh, well, that's a long time.
That's long enough, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are your leaves completely just very soft and black now?
Very soft. Yep. Now, right. And now they're starting to fall off.
Yeah. And it probably's got somewhat of an odor to it as well, I would assume.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. If you've got more than 50% of, you know, that type of material there, I don't think that plant's going to come back. You know, I've seen some orchids, you know, take a hit pretty bad and, you know, part of it will regenerate, but it sets them back to the point where you're going to be spending some years on that too. So you might want to come on out and replace that orchid for them.
Orchid Quest might be a real good place for you to go this weekend, Cindy.
Right, it probably is. Yeah. All right, well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, that doesn't bode well. Beth in Orfordville, hi.
Oh, hi. Say, this might be something that everyone knows, but if you like orchids and you like to read, I would highly recommend the Nero Wolf Mysteries written by Rex Stout. Mm-hmm. They start from the 1930s genre and keep coming forward. Anyway, Rex was quite an orchid grower, and so is his detective.
Yes.
And the orchids figure into many of the plots.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes, that's some very good reading. As a matter of fact, I had a customer in earlier this week that was, we're talking about the same thing, and she's been reading all of those. And, you know, a lot of people have picked up those books and read them and actually got interested in orchids from those. So
why not?
That's really, really interesting. That's very cool. Thanks for bringing that.
That's what happened to me.
All right.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
Thanks, Beth. And Darlene in Green Bay, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry and Chuck. I appreciate your show. And I want to tell you, Larry, that you are the most sincere and appreciative radio host on WPR.
Wow. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I have a question from my friend. She has a few orchids, and she's looking for a magazine that explains how to grow orchids that inside of them they have little insect-like forms. Do you know anything about that?
Well, you know, there's a couple of publications that you can get a hold of if you want to join, you know, like a society. The American Orchid Society puts out a monthly orchid magazine that is, it's highly educational and full of information. The curator of the Smithsonian, Tom Miranda, writes two articles a month in that issue, and he's got some really great things to say. I mean, I learned from that, and I've been doing this all my life. That's probably one entity. And, you know, the Internet is full of information, some of it probably somewhat erroneous, but you know, anything
out here,
anything in specifics that you want a question on, you know, don't hesitate to pick up the phone and call me at the nursery, you know, to talk about something in specific that you can't seem to find. You
and
know,
would tell me the name of your nursery one more time.
The nursery is Orchids Garden Center.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that Madison?
We're just on the north edge of Madison, a little town called Wanakee. So, yeah, we're literally 10 minutes from the square, 10 minutes from the Capitol.
And online, too. And actually, there's a link on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show to the business, too. Mm-hmm. So, Darlene, wonderful. Great. Thank you for calling.
Thank you every day. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate your call. Somebody called and said Rex Stout's sister, Ruth, was a famed organic gardener, Ruth Stout, and probably taught Rex all about gardening.
Oh, sure.
Ruth Stout was quite a character. She used to garden in the nude.
Oh, my gosh.
That's how she did her gardening. And anyway, there's some great stories out there about her. And great stories about Chuck Aker, too, the Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. It's always a pleasure to have him talk about orchids and about Orchid Quest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Orchids bring an exotic flair to the home or the office, and the blooms can be wonderfully long-lasting. But there is a whole lot of work sometimes that goes into that plant being ready to purchase and to flower. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. The world expert, or we have a world expert on orchids right here in Wisconsin, Chuck Aker. He is with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee, and also propagates and sells orchids through his own wholesale business. It's called Flasks by Chuck Aker. And Chuck, thanks again for spending time with us today. Really appreciate it.
No, it's a pleasure with you and your listeners, Larry.
Really appreciate it. And if you have a question for Chuck, do you grow orchids? What varieties have you had good experiences with? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And one of the reasons we have Chuck on this week is that Orchid Quest is Saturday and Sunday, tomorrow and Saturday, and then the next day, Sunday. And maybe we could talk a little bit more about what's going on there, because there's a lot to see and do.
There absolutely is. Absolutely. You know, we take up about 30,000 square feet of the Alliance Center, which is approximately one-third of that facility. Beautiful facility, so we can spread our wings. We have a huge exhibition room where commercial growers like ourselves, as well as others coming from all over the Midwest, will put on their displays of their assorted orchid plants. We also have the Orchid Societies putting on their own exhibits and displays, too, from various different places around the Midwest. So there is a super eclectic group of orchids to be seen in these exhibits. And these exhibits are actually judged by the American Orchid Society, as well as our local Orchid Growers Guild group. So there's two levels of judging going on there. We have a huge room for orchid plant sales, where most of us that are participating in the exhibition portion are there to also sell orchids. So the sales tables are just chocked full of blooming orchid plants. And when you walk into that room, the fragrance and the tropical environment almost, I mean, we just totally transform that room into a blooming paradise. And then there's also some really great seminars and speakers going on both days. Which we can probably go over now. On Saturday, starting at 11 o'clock, our keynote speaker coming in from California, Fred Clark from Sunset Valley Orchids, he's going to be putting on a program called Spotted and Splash-Petaled Cattleyas and Their Culture. Fred is a notorious hybridizer in this family of plants as well as some others, and due to the fact that he's coming from California, we welcome him with open arms. This is his second visit to our show. He is an amazing speaker, too, which he brings in a lot of interesting information. And then at 1 o'clock on Saturday, we have our longtime speaker, Herman P. Gores, who is one of the American Orchid Society judges from Dundee, Illinois. And he's been speaking on orchids for as long as I can remember. I kind of grew up with Herman in the business. You know, him and my father go way, way back. His program is taking the mystery out of orchid growing. So he takes makes a simplified version of, you know, taking care of your orchids, kind of like what we're doing here today. At 2:30 on Saturday, we have Sam Sui speaking from the Orchid Inn in Bloomington, Illinois, and his topic is the wonderful world of Brachypetalum. And the Brachypetalum is simply a family of lady slipper orchid, tropical lady slipper orchid, that Sam specializes in. And I've known Sam for years. He is probably one of the best growers of the lady slipper orchid, and especially the Brachypetalum group. So you see some really interesting plants on his sales table as well. Now we get into the really, really good stuff on Sunday. Sunday morning at 11 o'clock, we have Scott Weber from the Blue Stem Farms in Baraboo, Wisconsin. He is, to me, a world expert with native orchids, and not only the native Wisconsin orchids, but native North American orchids. Scott has an amazingly informational and wonderful program to sit in on. He packs the house when he does his program. I don't think he was speaking last year, so this year is going to be a really, really great to have him back. Full of information, so if you're interested in, you know, the native orchids of Wisconsin, he definitely is the gentleman to contact there. At 12:30, we have our own Ken Cameron from the University of Wisconsin, and I know Ken very well, and Ken actually has written a book on the vanilla orchid, so he has a lot to say, too, and his program isn't actually going to be on vanilla, but it's going to be on Why Do Orchid Names Keep Changing? And Ken and his group up at the University of Wisconsin have been instrumental in the reclassification of some of the orchid species and genera because of the modern DNA testing that's going on now. We're able to really, really define the differences between some of these orchid species. So some plants that were once called Cattleya are now called, you know, Gaurianthe, and others that were called Lilia are now called Cattleya. So there's been a lot of shifting of the genera and a lot of shifting of the species around, and Ken's going to put a great program together on that to kind of simplify that fact. And then at 2 o'clock on Sunday, we're going to close out with one of the Orchid Growers Guild's member. She's going to be putting on a program on repotting orchids. Lynn West from Madison here. She's been with the guild now, oh my gosh, probably 6 years, I'm going to guess. Okay. Maybe longer. Time flies. But she's wonderful. She has really stepped in, and she's a, I think she's got over 100 and some orchids in her house, and she just loves them. And she's going to do a little repotting demonstration on PowerPoint and answer your questions on that. So.
One thing that people have been calling in to ask is how much does it cost to attend? And there's a small cost.
Yep. Saturday, we have hours of 10 to 5 and Sunday 10 to 4. It's $7 a day, or you can pick up a two-day pass for $10 if you don't think you're going to get enough one day, or if you want to maybe even pass your pass off to someone else the next day. But, it's a lot to see. So, I mean, you can spend literally hours in the exhibition room and just soaking up. There's stuff in there. I walk around. There's things in there that I constantly didn't see the first time around and second or even third time around. So it's just, there's literally thousands of blooming orchid plants out there. It's almost overwhelming.
Sylvia in Appleton has a question for you, so I want to get to her. Sylvia, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a comment first. I've got some phalaenopsis, and I'm growing these plants in a north window, so they're not getting any of the direct sunlight. But I had read or heard someplace that if you cut off the flower stem and leave like three junctions, and I've been doing that, and then all of a sudden this year I got one that's got two flower stems caught coming off the cutoff one plus a new one.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Really nice. But I don't know where I'm going to go with them, but I have a question. I have a Bialaria, I think it's pronounced.
Uh-huh, yes.
Marswitch, Howard's Dream.
Oh, yeah, beautiful purple flower on that one.
Yes, and I just, well, it's just finishing up on a 10-flower, 2-foot-long stalk on it. But I noticed it's very prolific. I keep taking new plants out of the main thing,
mm-hmm.
but it seems like it's only blossoming on the new shoots that are coming off.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Oh, it will.
That,
so
yeah.
That will not blossom on my main plant anymore.
Correct. That the Bialaria is actually in the Oncidium family. And
oh, okay.
Yes, the Oncidium family of plant is, they grow sympoidally, meaning that it grows on a rhizome. So new growth comes off of the old flowered growth. And the old flowered growth subsequently is never going to flower again, but the new growth that emerged from it will. The old growth needs to stay there because that big pseudobulb that's been generated is a vital nutrient and water-storing portion of that plant. So those groups of bulbs actually stay in the pot typically for quite a while until you get such a robust plant that you need to take it apart and divide it.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing. I've given away like 4 or 5 plants.
Yeah. Very prolific plant. So you've done very well with that. They typically do good in our upper Midwestern climate. They like it a little bit on the cooler side, and they have just ginormous, magnificent dark purple flowers to them.
And I noticed in the summer, when if it does blossom in the warmer weather, the flowers are much lighter in color. Mm,
that's very observant. Yes, very observant. That's
which
very true.
Me.
Yeah, the color of the orchid flower is somewhat affected by the temperature. That particular one is notorious for being a little bit more pale in the warmer climate, and then very, very dark purple when it's blooming now. Typically, they bloom now, but they can go all over the board when you get a fully matured plant, too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a lot of the red orchids are more, the color's more accentuated in the cooler climate, so that's very, very common for that, and it's very observant of you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's good to know that I have to leave my main plant there, too.
Oh, yes. Don't get rid of that.
Okay. Now, I have a question on the potting soil.
Okay.
Locally, all I've been able to find in the commercial ones, and I won't mention a name, there's so much dirt in there now
mm-hmm.
that when I water it, I usually take them over the sink and let it run through a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much dirt, it just sits on the top, and it doesn't soak in right away.
Yeah, there's a ton of different, you know, orchid potting mixtures out there, that's for sure. But if your plant is happy in what it's currently, you know, growing
in bark chips. It's in the bark chip type thing right now.
Yeah, that's preferred for the Bialaria, the Oncidium family, definitely. They like that porous, fast-draining type of mix. So, you know, that's, you know, if you can't find good mix, you know, get on our website, we can mail it to you. It's, you know, pop it in the mail. It costs a little bit more to get it mailed, but you know, it's better than losing your plant because you potted it in something that wasn't conducive.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Your program.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in too, by the way. We have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Talking orchids today with Chuck Aker. Great to have him along, and thank you so much for listening in. We had an email from Jan in Rhinelander. Jan says, I accidentally broke off the top 3 inches of the bud end of a new 1-foot-tall flower spike on my Phalaenopsis. Should I leave it alone and see what happens or cut it off at the base?
Well, the top 3 inches, you know, depending on if she's got any buds on there behind that break, you know, I would definitely leave it. In some cases when that tip has been terminated, that often encourages the lower nodes that are on the stem to be stimulated and to start to branch out. It's almost like cropping it back entirely. So at this point, I would leave it. And if it has buds or not, leave it and just see what happens to those lower nodes. Gosh, she might get two or three lateral shoots off of those lower nodes and have even, you know, more of a beautiful display than she would just from the initial stem.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the Facebook question from Rebecca, who has a Phalaenopsis, she's had the Phalaenopsis stems. They die. They don't die all the way back before they start to grow more off the end. Is this okay, or should she cut them all the way down to the base?
Yeah, you know, that's a common phenomenon with the Phalaenopsis lately. These new hybrids are really charged up and ready to produce flowers for months on end. We get calls from people that, you know, are, my Phalaenopsis keeps blooming, you know, I can't get it repotted. And, you know, it's a terrible thing to have happen, but nevertheless, yeah, there's going to be a day where you're just going to have to cut that stem back and, you know, get it cleaned up, get it repotted and so on. Force the plant to generate a new flower spike so you can have that nice arrangement of flowers again instead of having that long, gangly stem. And it's difficult for us to do, though. I just really see our customers struggling with cutting those stems off when they perpetually have these flowers going. But you see some of these Phalaenopsis with a 3 or 4 foot bloom stem on it, you know, and it's just like all over the place. And yeah, it gets a little bit unruly.
Well, Carol wondered in an email about Phragmopedium.
Mm-hmm.
She bought one from a hobbyist a few months ago. Had lots of dead leaves at the bottom. She says, I removed those and there are 5 long stems. Should I divide those in the spring and should I bury those long, lanky stems? Each stem has new growth right now.
Yeah. Well, the Phragmopedium is definitely a genera of orchid that I'm very passionate about, and that's my specialty of hybridizing, actually. Phragmopedium is a very easy orchid plant to grow as an indoor plant. She's got a lot of dead leaves. It looks like the plant probably wasn't, you know, repotted and cared for properly. The Phragmopedium typically grows on a long rhizome, or what's called a stallone. So the space between the old growth and the new growth is sometimes, you know, an inch or several inches in some cases. So it can crawl itself right out of the pot very, very easily. And if it's left unattended, they are totally unruly. So yes, she can cut those pieces up, you know, into sections of one piece with, you know, an old growth with a new growth still attached to that section, providing it has some roots underneath of it when she makes the cut in the rhizome. You can take that section and subsequently plant it, and that'll take right off. The important thing is in that situation is to make sure that the new growth is as close as you can get it to the potting medium, so when the new roots come out of the new growth, that they go right into the potting medium. And that can be a real challenge. If she happens to be local, we'd be more than happy to help her out with that, because it can get to be a little challenging cutting those up. But, you know, she's got a heck of a plant there.
Yeah.
She can certainly afford to lose a piece or so in experience.
We had somebody wondered about mounted orchids. What are mounted orchids?
Well, mounted orchids, which we have thousands of at the greenhouse, basically simulating how the orchid grows in nature. Now, most of these orchids we're talking about are epiphytes, meaning that they grow up on other plants, primarily trees in the jungle. So what we're doing there at the greenhouse with these mounted orchids is simply taking the orchid variety and mounting it on a piece of wood. We commonly use some cedar pieces. We can use little pieces of grapevine or grape wood. You can use driftwood. You can use cork pieces, cork slabs. There's a variety of different local barks we're using for like shag bark, hickory. You can use anything that's got a good integrity to it, like the hard barks. And you tie the orchid to it with a little sphagnum moss in between the plant and the mount. And I'll tell you, those things just take right off. It's a very interesting look because, again, you're simulating how that orchid actually is growing in nature. So you can see all the roots as they're coming out of the rhizomes and so on, they're just right out there in the air, and it's just so neat to watch all that. And you can raise some plants to full maturity on these mounts, or you can choose some of the miniature orchids, which are very, very conducive for mounting. And it's a really a wonderful, wonderful way to watch the plants grow and to see how they really respond, and just like they would in nature.
How long does it take to raise? I mean, your work, your personal business, you raise an orchid from seed to bloom.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a very long, arduous process, which a lot of people don't realize. Just the creating of the seed pod from the hybridization point is usually a year in the making. So there's a year just generating the seed pod itself. And once the seed pod is matured, the seed is sent off to a specialty laboratory where they're actually going to sow the seed in a nutrient agar solution in a sterile environment commonly known as the orchid flask. You can get some really great information on orchid flasks if you pull that up on the internet too. And basically it's just a sealed vessel. It's sterile inside. That's where the orchid seed is going to germinate. And that's where that plant's going to spend another year to 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah, inside that flask. Once it's developed enough roots and enough energy and leaf growth in that flask, then we pull them out and we wash off the nutrient agar and we community plant them into a group. So we'll take, you know, 30 or 50 plants and we'll put them in a pot that they're all together yet. They're still just little things. They'll grow in that situation for approximately a year. When they're big enough from that point, then they'll get transplanted into their individual pot, which is usually a 2.5 or 3 inch. So that'll develop in that for another year. And then from there, they get incrementally potted into larger pots until they're flowering size. And that whole process from flask to blooming plant is upwards to 5 years or seven.
Wow.
In most cases. So, yeah, there's a long time invested
in
that.
And a lot can happen.
And a lot can happen.
5 to 7 years.
A lot can happen. And, you know, when we make new hybrids, like I stated earlier, sometimes you spend all those years and it ends up, you know, a bust. It's a dumpster material. So,
oh, man. Well, we got an email from Joan, who says she said, I don't know if we've already covered this because I've been listening between errands. I have a Phalaenopsis orchid that has many, many roots that are over a foot long. I don't even have a spot for it anymore. Can those roots be trimmed? I just repotted last year.
Oh, my. She just repotted and she got air roots. Crazy, huh? Well, you know, we don't always recommend trimming them off, but I'll tell you, a plant that is that vigorous can certainly tolerate the trimming of the air roots. I mean, we do it at the greenhouse just because they're going all over the place, you know, and it does make it a little bit inconducive to have around when you got these stiff roots poking at, you know, all over the place. So the short answer to that is yes, and make sure that if you're trimming roots off of that plant and maybe another plant too, sterilize your cutting tool between these orchids because you don't want to be transmitting any of the diseases, viruses, and things that can be inherent to the orchid family. So that's very important.
And Chuck, we've had people wondering how to get a hold of you. Your phone number for your own business.
Well, my own business is actually very specialized. It's basically selling of the flasks that I create for kind of like a hobby, as well as generating the production of the certain Phragmopedium orchid for our business. But if they want to get a hold of me as far as my personal endeavor, they can certainly reach me at the greenhouse, and that would be the best way to do it.
And the greenhouse, of course, we've got that posted up on our center, on my Facebook page. It's Orchids Garden Center and Nursery.
Mm-hmm.
And just if you type that in, you're going to get it.
You bet.
You want to keep.
You bet.
Chuck, thank you so much. We'll see you at Orchid Quest tomorrow and Sunday. Great times for everybody with a great interest in orchids. And Chuck Aker, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
We'll have him back. We'll do it again. And Chuck's with orchids. He's literally world-renowned with his knowledge of orchids, and it's great to have him along. He'll come back and be with us again. Thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.